This is a CKTZ News Update. I'm Lonnie Taylor. Local journalist Odette Auger was recently recognized by the Canadian Association of Journalism at the Mindset Awards. I sat down with Odette to find out more about her journey into journalism.
Congratulations on your recognition for the Mindset Awards.
Yeah, one of them got an honorable mention. There's only a first prize and then an honorable mention. So in my mind, I'm just feeling happy about that. It's like second place.
What you were being acknowledged for, which article that you actually got the award for and the honorable mention?
So it is a collaboration, the Mindset Award category. It's actually for two streams. There's workplace mental health reporting, and then there's also for mental health of young people. And it's a collaboration. So it's Canadian Association of Journalism and then the Canadian Forum on Journalism, Violence and Trauma with CBC News and Mental Health Commission of Canada. Their goal was to just get a snapshot of mental wellness in Canada. One way of doing that is looking at the best stories and the diverse stories and see what writers were focusing on. I don't know if all writers do this, but for me, my process is to see what communities and what people want to share with me. So I don't usually go in with a fixed idea. It's more see what they have to share with me. It's often pretty different than what I thought it was going to be going in. And yeah, there were 50 people who applied, I think, 50-something. Two of my stories were finalists in both those categories. And so that was already, like, I was totally honored and amazed and really happy about that because the stories were really meaningful for different reasons. So it just felt good to have the recognition, period. And I want to win honorable mention, and that was the reporting on mental health of young people. And that one was for WinSpeaker. So I'm a freelance reporter, so I write for a bunch of different places. And for WinSpeaker, I wrote Gentle Truth Telling in July, and it was just after the first 215 children were recovered. And so it was Gentle Truth Telling, how to talk to our youngest community members about residential schools. And to be honest, even if I hadn't written a story, I would have outreached the same people just for my personal interest. I'm a mom. I've worked many years with young people. I just was imagining what it would be like to be an educator in a classroom right now and how they're managing these really essential conversations, but also really difficult conversations. I guess I was feeling empathetic and compassion for how educators would be coping with these conversations in some communities, maybe more so than others. And then also, they should be talking about it. And so I wanted to explore that a little bit with some teachers that I knew. And I was really happy with how that came out. And it's a lot of layers to the conversation. My mom went to residential school in her early childhood years. And yeah, it, for sure, it impacted our house in a lot of ways that we didn't totally understand for until we were old enough that she could tell us a little bit. And we actually, she never once said she went to residential school. She would talk around it a little bit, but never really directly. And it wasn't until we were in college and studying different things and coming home and saying, Mom, did this ever happen for you? This didn't happen for you. Yes. Yeah, it did. And that's pretty much the end of that conversation for another 10 years. So, really small bits at a time. So it seemed most personally meaningful to me to hear how we can talk to our young ones and how we should be talking to our young ones.
Wow, thank you for sharing that. How did you end up in journalism and where did that journey begin?
I'm glad you asked. It began with Cortez Radio. Yeah, it did. And that was David Russo, who's a beautiful person, and he had an idea and a little bit of funding that the radio was receiving, and it could only go through FOCI because of charitable status, and so the donor would get a tax receipt. And so it became automatically like a de facto collaboration with FOCI. It was an environmental series. He really felt moved, inspired by Robin Kimmerer in the Braiding Sweetgrass. He really thought, what if we could look at local stories, local problems, local solutions, and would really find focus on centering Indigenous voices. And so that was the Deep Roots series. And increasingly, we worked on that 1 year, and then we did a little better with it the second year. We received funding, you know, generous funding, both years. And the second year, we inverted the process. And I think that's where I learned a lot about centering voices, too. Some of the writers weren't getting a lot of prompt responses, or their stories were going off in different directions and without a lot of Indigenous voices included at all. And so the second year, when I was writing up that grant, I just did a little bit of brainstorming. It needs to be inverted completely to go and ask the community, what stories do you want to share? Because maybe they don't have a lot to share about the really specific things that writer-producers were going in hoping to get a story. So I think mainstream media does that a lot. So it was no fault of the writer-producers necessarily. It was more like that is mainstream media. That is how people write a story. They have an idea and they go, they have questions that are steered to get the story, to elicit the story that they are hoping to get. And so it becomes a matter of collecting sound bites. And I think I definitely learned that that's not the best way of doing it or the way I wanted to be doing it. And so that's influenced how I start to write for Indigenous and how I write for other outlets. Also, is even if I have a seed idea of a story, not having a fixed agenda, I want this story to look like this at the end. Because you miss the real stories, and they're usually way more interesting, and that's what people want to share and communicate. And so I just see myself as helping them communicate their stories. So that's the best part, the best feeling, I should say, about writing and interviewing, is that process of preserving the heart of the story, which is the voices and what they lit up about or what they offered as a gift. I'm going to actually tell you why I really am motivated to do this project, or what's really the need that we are meeting in our community. And preserving that in a work that's filled with deadlines and word count, it can be its own task all of its own.
How do you seek out mentors in journalism?
I don't really actively outreach them. I think that different people have presented themselves along the way. Aside from the very beginning with Cortez Radio, we brought Rob Selmanovic over, and not over, he was living on Cortez at the time, and he was a CBC producer, and he was really thorough and really gave us a lot of good templates and good start in thinking about a more traditional approach to story writing, I would say. And there's a certain way that CBC stories are written, and I think everyone can benefit from learning that, even if they choose to do it differently later. And so that's what he offered us, and that was a real gift. But I think that, you know, like Kit Malo was a mentor of mine, and she's not a journalist. She's actually an instructor of mine at McGill. I finished a degree that I was doing online before and through COVID. So crazy, but perfectly online all the way through. The only way it got finished is because it was online to start with. But she was an instructor, and she was all about organizational behavior, but really specifically about social justice and ways that we want to move our society. And she would just go off curriculum all the time to follow the conversation, because our cohort was all Indigenous, almost completely Indigenous the first year. And the second year, we also had a lot of newer Canadians and really amazing conversations. And she would just say, okay, this is way more interesting. Like, why don't you talk, you know, take the lead? And so I had some really brilliant classmates. And so those were conversations that I carried with me into my writing and into other work that I was doing. Just really best practices and going beyond performative allyship.
What was the name of the program at McGill that you took online?
Well, that was Public Administration and Governance. And yeah, that was beautiful that she lives in Montreal, and so she could accept that for me. Because the CAJ, the Canadian Association for Journalism, they said, okay, we can fly you up. And when speakers said, oh, that's perfect, and we'll put you up in a nice hotel, and just for one night. And there's part of me that seems pretty wasteful. Like, I just thought, a week in Montreal would be amazing. Like, for a night, like, that's a huge, it was a gala event, like, it was really beautiful, and really a gift, just even as a gesture. I just felt like I don't have to accept that gift to feel like I've been gifted. So I asked a mentor who was sitting there to go and accept on my behalf. That felt really good because it was a thank you for her too. She got to have a really fun night and you know, celebrating with incredible journalists and a beautiful dinner for her and her partner. But yeah, I think I would like to go another time. But for this year, it just, I was meeting with other interviewees and I just had another big story in the go. It's a priority. It's an honor just to have, know people are even reading your stories, and the recognition that goes along with that is goes a long way to nourish you and feed the story writing a little more. Because it can get hard. It can weigh heavy sometimes on some of the heavier stories. So it feels good to have the recognition for sure. And of your peers and their writers. I was mostly motivated to write this story, like I shared with you earlier, to find out how educators are managing these conversations. And I felt really moved and inspired by what they did share with me, and that's in the story. But also because my mom's silence, it just made me want to learn more about how we can have these conversations in good ways. I think I navigated okay with my kids, but increasingly better. I remember there was one point where I realized my kids didn't know either. Like, I had just not mentioned it. Yeah, there was a movie that came out, and I found it easier to share the movie with my daughters as young teenagers than I did just bringing up the conversation myself. So watching the movie, that led to conversations, and I found it wasn't a total pattern repeating itself thing, but there was that obvious tendency to protect your kids from ugly things and protect your kids because my mom was just happy that this didn't happen to us, and she felt like she was doing the best she could, and that included not wanting us to feel hurt about what happened to her. It was harder sharing it with my girls, and then I have a younger one, just 9, and I found it a lot easier to talk about it with him, maybe just a little more practice and no more to and fro with my daughters over the years. It was something that I couldn't not share because I was so distraught last year with the first 215. It was pretty overwhelming for everybody, I think, and it just felt easier to tell him. And we were in the garden. We were gardening. I said, I have a cool idea for a project, because he was homeschooling with me, and what if we did some orange rocks? I had some interviews at North Island, and so we were going to do a bit of a road trip and camping trip. So I said, you know, we could put them in some places. He was like, yeah, that sounds good. And so he knows what Orange T-shirt Day is, and so we started painting these rocks, and then I said, I wrote on one, this one's for my mom, this one's for my grandma, this one's for my grandpa, this is for my great-grandma, my great, like, the list, I'm the first in that family to not go to residential school. We're talking a little bit about that, and just side by side, it's easier when your hands are moving to have these conversations. And he was nodding and caring, he was painting with care, and then putting, like, love and things like that on it. And then I put 215 on one of them, and he said, you know, I guess I had shared some kids didn't come back from there, and some bad things happened in the residential schools, and some kids never did go home. They died there, and their parents never got to say goodbye. And it's impossible to, you know, really capture the whole thing, and sometimes simpler is better. And he nodded and sort of was absorbing that. We kept painting. And then when I did the 215, he's like, what's that? And I said that, you know, at the time, that's how many they found. And we just hugged each other really tight. I don't know, I have a lot of faith in the young people of what they can understand, and they feel it from you anyway. If I had tried to hide it, he would pick up that something is wrong anyway. When they overhear little glimpses of conversations, whether it's someone chatting in the ferry lineup, they do hear more than people sometimes realize they hear.
Odette, can you share a bit about the story that you earned an honorable mention for at the Mindset Awards?
One of them was Indigenous, and that was from February 10th, 2021. And it was workers, really long title actually, workers tackling anti-Indigenous racism say they face scapegoating and backlash at Island Health. And a really powerful voice in there was Yvette Ring-Cowan. And she to this day, I'm really grateful to what she shared and how she shared. It was the first story that I really had to learn how to work with anonymous sources and to protect people's careers and livelihood and navigating that in a way that was good, meaning not pushing them, not saying, no, I can't use it because I can't name you or I need to name your organization, different things like that. Just making a lot of space for people to share their voices in ways that they were able to and felt safe doing so. I think there was a lot in that story that didn't stay through the editing process. But to this day, I wonder if we could have gone further into some of nepotism and some tokenism. But writing an investigative article, writing a newsy article, you know, we really tried to just stick to the timeline of events and Yvette's voices there. So it's one of those stories that I think if you read between the lines in some spots, you get a bigger sense of how impactful those events were for the mental health of that team. So I was really happy to see that one honored as just one of the finalists. But I would also ask that people read the first place winners because one of them, okay, the one for workplace mental health reporting, so that was the same category as the story I just described, and it was won by a team of six writers at the Fifth Estate for CBC, and it was named Broken Honor, and that was March 2021, and it was an investigation into how military police and justice officials allow cases of sexual misconduct to go unpunished and what those consequences are for mental health and morale, and that's a really powerful story. And the other one, for the youth category, the first place went to also a team of eight people for the Toronto Star, and it was an investigative journalism bureau story with University of Toronto, and it took them 2 years, and it was a series called Generation Distress, and again, that was for the Toronto Star. And so that's when you read those stories, to me, that was the biggest honor, is just being lumped in with some really amazing writing and some really powerful stories. I just thought that's a prize for me already.
Lonnie Taylor, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.